The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today is Thursday, May 28th. What to know today about a milestone we hoped the U.S. would never reach. The first of its kind voting on Capitol Hill and the major new law just passed in China. Plus, a historic launch delayed, more drone deliveries happening, and a big change to IGTV is coming soon. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview. You'll learn exactly what to expect if you get a call from a contact tracer. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. Well, the U.S. surpassed a grim milestone this week, topping 100,000 deaths from COVID-19, all in just a few months. In fact, as of early this morning, the U.S. death toll was up to 100,442. The AP reports that number is really just a best estimate. Many experts think it's lower than the real thing, and they're worried as crowds may start gathering again soon. For example, Las Vegas casinos plan to welcome tourists again as soon as next week, and some Disney theme parks could reopen by July. The nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, is asking people not to leapfrog some of the recommendations. He says it's just asking for trouble. Reuters reports an average of about 1,400 Americans have died every day in the month of May, and that's actually down from the peak in April. Right now, the U.S. has the most confirmed cases and deaths in the world by far, although when you look at deaths per capita, the U.S. ranks 8th. Belgium has the most deaths per capita, followed by Spain, the U.K., and Italy. Unfortunately, though, this pandemic is not over yet. Well, for the first time in U.S. history, lawmakers in the House voted by proxy. That means if a lawmaker is not physically at the Capitol in Washington, D.C., they can assign another lawmaker who will be there to cast the vote for them. Normally, House members must be present to vote on legislation. But the rules changed recently because of safety concerns. They're trying to avoid bringing together all 435 House members, especially as the number of new COVID-19 cases spiked in D.C. Still, the AP reports most lawmakers did end up going to the Capitol anyway. Only 70 representatives cast their votes by proxy. All of them were Democrats. Yet Republicans are not happy about that process. Remember, 20 of them are suing to stop more voting by proxy. In fact, some Republicans warn the legislation passed this week might not actually become law since they believe the whole new system is unconstitutional. It's not clear yet how effective that lawsuit will be, though. All of that said, the Senate is still working out of the U.S. Capitol during this pandemic. Since there are only 100 senators, social distancing is likely a little easier. Still, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi criticized Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell for holding regular sessions in person. She says he's ignoring advice of health experts who say that many people should not get together if it's not necessary. But McConnell pushed back, insisting the Senate is being safe about it, and he says senators are going back to work just like other Americans. Early this morning, China approved a national security law over Hong Kong, and it could have worldwide implications. Since the 90s, China and Hong Kong have had a one-country, two-systems arrangement. Well, that was supposed to remain in effect until 2047, but this new law will likely override that one, and it could mean less independence for Hong Kong. The specifics of the law are still being hashed out, but already we know one key part of this new law concerns the pro-democracy or anti-government protests in Hong Kong, like the ones we saw for months late last year. Under this legislation, those protests become illegal when the law goes into effect, likely in September. This comes just one day after people protested in Hong Kong once again. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told Congress yesterday the U.S. no longer considers Hong Kong separate from China, and that's a pretty big deal. CNN says it could mean the end of Hong Kong's special trading status with the U.S., and it even threatens its standing as one of Asia's largest financial hubs. For the second night in a row, protesters got out of control in Minneapolis, Minnesota. They're demanding a police officer be charged with murder. Remember, they're upset over the death of George Floyd. He's the black man who died after a police officer kneeled on his neck, and it was recorded on video. That officer and three others involved in the arrest were fired, but no one's been charged with a crime. Well, the Minneapolis Star Tribune reports some protesters broke windows of a police precinct last night, set fires, and looted nearby businesses. Minneapolis police fired tear gas and flashbang grenades into the crowds. One man was even found shot and killed, although it's not clear yet if or how it was connected to the protests, and police say they did arrest someone. Earlier in the day, the Minneapolis mayor echoed protesters' demands, and the Minnesota governor also said he was shocked and horrified by the video. In fact, President Trump called the incident very sad and tragic, and The Hill reports he called on the FBI and Justice Department to speed up investigations into Floyd's death. So we waited nearly a decade to see astronauts launch into space from American soil once again. And now we'll have to wait at least another 2 days. The historic launch planned for yesterday was delayed because of bad weather. Remember, two NASA astronauts were planning to launch into orbit on a SpaceX rocket on their way to the International Space Station. Well, it turns out thunder and lightning got in the way. There was even a tornado warning issued near the launch area in Florida. Still, they did not decide to cancel until there was just 17 minutes before liftoff. The launch is now scheduled for Saturday afternoon instead at Kennedy Space Center. The launch will mark the first time a private company will send American astronauts into orbit. Experts say it could mark the beginning of a new era of human spaceflight. Assuming it does happen on Saturday as planned, you'll be able to watch the launch from home. NASA, SpaceX, and major news networks will stream it live. All right, we have more news still ahead, but first, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor this week. We don't all have the same hair, so why should we all use the same shampoo and conditioner? Well, Function of Beauty makes it so we don't have to. Function of Beauty is the internet's top-rated customized hair care brand with more than 30,000 five-star customer reviews and counting. In fact, I made time for some self-care on Saturday, and I used not just the customized shampoo and conditioner that I've been using every day, but also the hair mask, which I loved, and my hair felt so soft afterwards. And all it takes to get started is a short four-question quiz where you let them know about your hair and your hair goals, and they formulate the bottle for your unique hair type. Plus, Function of Beauty never uses sulfates, parabens, phthalates, mineral oils, or any other harmful ingredients. So to get started right now, go to functionofbeauty.com/newsworthy to take your four-part hair profile quiz and save 20% on your first order. Don't spend another minute in hair misery. Go to functionofbeauty.com/newsworthy to let them know we sent you. That's functionofbeauty.com/newsworthy. Now, back to the news. More drones are helping healthcare workers fight COVID-19. They're now being used in North Carolina to deliver medical supplies to a hospital just outside of Charlotte. The California drone company Zipline is behind this with the blessing of the FAA. Axios reports the drones are loaded up with 4 pounds of face masks and other protective equipment. They're even flown roughly 15 miles to the hospital where the supplies drop out of the sky using parachutes. The drones are battery-powered and can make a bunch of trips each day. And the fact that they're flying 15 miles one way is actually pretty impressive. That's the furthest of any other drone delivery operation in the U.S. The company says it eventually wants to deliver COVID-19 treatments and even vaccines to coronavirus hotspots. By the way, we have mentioned this startup company Zipline before. They were already using drones to transport items for COVID-19 tests in rural parts of Africa, and they've been testing the drones there for other deliveries for years now. More signs of trouble from the airline industry, which has taken a hit during this pandemic. The Wall Street Journal says American Airlines is going to cut 30% of its management and administration staff, and that's on top of tens of thousands of American Airlines employees who already took unpaid leave or retired early to help cut costs. Also, airplane manufacturer Boeing is looking to cut 10% of its workforce, mostly from the U.S. Despite the cuts, Boeing had another big announcement. It's resuming production on the grounded 737 MAX jetliner. Remember, that's the aircraft involved in two deadly crashes about a year and a half ago. The company spent $18 billion trying to fix the issue that likely contributed to the crashes. Well, the jets are still grounded for now, but Boeing says it's improved the systems to work on them once again. Expect Instagram's IGTV to look a little bit different. For the first time, Instagram will run ads on IGTV, and the platform will start sharing the money it makes from them with the video creators. Similar to how Google's YouTube works, Instagram will give creators a 55% cut of the ad revenue as long as they follow some extra rules. For now, Instagram is testing the concept with just a couple hundred chosen influencers starting next week, and they'll be testing different ways to present the 15-second ads, like whether you'll be able to skip them when you watch. The goal is to eventually expand the option to more users and videos worldwide. And that's not all. Instagram also plans to sell badges through Instagram Live starting as soon as next month. Viewers will be able to buy the badges, costing between $1 and $5, to get special recognition during the live feed. Thailand's Moor cicadas are expected this summer. After 17 years underground, a big red-eyed type of the insect are slowly emerging on the East Coast. They're pretty harmless to humans, but noisy. USA Today reports they can be as loud as a lawnmower. It's a mating call. They're popping up in North Carolina, Virginia, and West Virginia, and they've been seen across parks, patios, decks, and sidewalks. They surface to mate, but they will leave again soon. They'll go back underground for another 17 years or so. That's it for the main 10 minutes of news today, but now it's time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. And this week is part two of our series on contact tracing. Today, you'll learn specifically what to expect if a contact tracer calls you on the phone and why this all matters. Today's guest is directly involved. Dr. Mike Reed leads the contact tracing efforts for the University of California, San Francisco, working alongside the city's public health department. He's also the chief medical officer for the state's training program for contact tracers. And we'll get into it in just seconds, but first, this interview is brought to you by Blinkist, one of the easiest ways to learn new things quickly. It's a unique app that provides the best key takeaways from popular books in just 15 minutes. I love it for quick motivation in the mornings. Go to Blinkist.com/news to try it free and save 25% off your new subscription. All right, here's the interview. Hi, Dr. Reed. Thanks so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
You're welcome. Nice to be with you.
So first, walk us through your brief take on how contact tracing works and what the people involved or the workers actually do.
Whenever there's a new case of COVID-19 here in San Francisco, the first thing that happens after that result is identified is that one of our team will reach out to that new case, that individual suffering from COVID-19, and do something called a case investigation. We get on the phone, we find out how that individual is, where they've been, when did their symptoms start, and who they've come into contact with since they fell ill, and for a couple of days before they fell ill, in order that we can identify who are their close contacts who are at risk for COVID-19. And then the role of the contact tracer is to reach out to those close contacts in a separate phone call and alert those contacts to their risk and help them to understand their shared responsibility in ending the epidemic by quarantining at home so that if they go on to develop symptoms of COVID themselves, they don't spread the disease onto their close contacts.
Kind of walk us through, what does that conversation sound like when you actually make that call to someone who may have been exposed? And also, what's the cooperation level that contact tracers tend to get back?
When we get on the phone, we start with a sort of a standard intro. Hi, I'm calling from San Francisco Department of Public Health. I want to alert you to the fact that you've been in close proximity to somebody suffering from COVID-19. Do you know who that person is? Sometimes the individual does, sometimes they don't. We don't tell them who that individual is. But as I say, if it's a household contact, more often than not, they know who it is in their household that's sick. And then we ask them to, tell us in their own words what they understand about COVID-19. And then more specifically, we ask them, do you have any symptoms of COVID? And we run through symptoms with them. We recommend everybody gets tested. If you're a close contact with somebody with COVID-19, we want to make sure that you're able to access testing. So we refer for testing. And then we spend a little bit of time helping them understand the importance of quarantine. The nature of COVID is that if you are in close proximity, there's a chance that you will develop symptoms yourself, but those symptoms may not develop for a few days after that initial exposure. And so we ask you to stay at home so that if you do go on to develop symptoms, you're not spreading the infection to those around you. When people understand that by playing this role, by taking responsibility for their own, behavior in this way, they can prevent the spread of COVID-19 in their communities, more often than not, they're very receptive to these phone calls. But look, I think when we get on the phone, in the first instance, sometimes there's anxiety, sometimes there's diffidence, people are fearful, and it takes a couple of minutes to help them understand why we're calling. And sometimes we have to explain, look, we're not interested in your legal status, your documentation status. We're not going to ask you for your social security number or your bank details. The reason we're on the phone is because we want you to understand the role that you can play in preventing the spread of this disease. And as people understand that, more often than not, they totally buy into why we're calling them.
What's the average number of people that one infected person has potentially exposed to the virus? Or in other words, the average number of people contact tracers have to call for every one positive test?
So, Erica, that is completely determined by the level of activity of that individual suffering from COVID-19. So at this moment, whilst all of San Francisco is sheltering in place, staying at home with their families, the number of close contacts that they're in contact with is not that great. It's actually about 3.5 to 4 contacts at this time. But look, we anticipate that number will increase substantially as people resume some kind of level of normal activity. But hopefully, as our communities understand the importance of social distancing and wearing facial coverings, we'll be able to still keep that number of contacts down.
One of the questions we've received is, what if someone is back at work in an office-like setting? Does that entire workplace essentially have to shut down?
So you have a standard definition that we use. We're interested in close contacts that you spent more than 10 minutes in close proximity, less than 6 feet from. And then we also think of close contacts as any intimate or sexual partners that you've had, as well as people that have been exposed to secretion, saliva, sneeze, mucus, etc. And so that number is often a fair smaller number than everybody that shares a large communal workspace.
So at least for now, how many workers do you think it takes to do effective contact tracing in a local area and or around the country? And where do we stand right now compared to where we need to be?
So in San Francisco, for example, if there are 40 cases a day, and we think that there are 3 contacts per case, that's 120 contacts per day, and it takes half an hour on the phone, that's 60 hours of FTE, a full-time work. And so our workforce is calibrated according to that level of need. And our best guesstimate is that as we move beyond shelter in place here in San Francisco, we probably need between 100 and 150 contact tracers that are able to work, full time. I think the estimates for the need across the country are mind-bogglingly high. At least 100,000 is one estimate from Johns Hopkins. Tom Frieden, the ex-CDC director, estimated that maybe 300,000 contact tracers were needed. So certainly a huge number. As to whether we have reached the necessary levels, the workforce requirements, no, I don't think so. I think there are very few states or local jurisdictions that have staffed up at a level necessary to anticipate and respond to the contact tracing requirements necessary as we move to a more liberal society in the coming weeks and months.
What's your take on why we aren't up to speed?
I think there's a couple of ways of answering that question. Across the country, departments of public health are working day and night. And look, if you think about some of the hardest hit parts of the country, they were hit by a tsunami of COVID in the last few weeks, and their public health departments have been overwhelmed. And they've had to attend to many other more pressing needs, multiple outbreaks in skilled nursing facilities, in homeless shelters, etc. And those things have to take priority over scaling contact tracing programs.
Let's wrap up with the overall takeaway of what contact tracing can do when it comes to the spread of this virus moving forward, and any other final thoughts you want to add.
Over the course of 10 rounds of infection, that one person who infects 3 other people could end up infecting 59,000 other people. And so contact tracing plays a crucial role in stopping those chains of ongoing transmission. Every time I reach out to somebody and say, I need you to quarantine so that you don't spread the virus, you're preventing rounds and rounds, thousands and thousands of people getting infected. And I think that's the crucial role that this intervention plays. But look, it's not a silver bullet. And if we're going to ask people to quarantine at home, not leave their house for 14 days, we have to provide them with the important resources, the food needs, the material needs, their medical needs in order to do that. This speaks to a larger debate that has to continue around how much do we want to invest in our public health infrastructure if we're serious about ending the pandemic.
You can read more about this topic and our guest in today's episode notes. And in case you missed it, we talked about the technology side of contact tracing in last Thursday's interview. Thanks so much for listening today. Be sure to subscribe and share if you found this episode helpful. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 in the morning every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow with the news you need to know for Friday and the weekend. Until then, have a great day.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.